Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who took perverse pleasure in the national championship game, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Gerald, I didn't take perverse pleasure. It's very simple. The only team from Texas that should ever win a national championship is the University of. So I'm going to, unlike I guess some people who choose to root for every Texas team, which is a wild thing to me, I'm going to root against every other team from Texas. I obviously will root against A&M and Baylor and Tech, but I even TCU, who's only slightly worse than those, I will root against them as well. Heck, I'll root against Texas State and UTSA if I have to, and I like those guys. No one but Texas gets to win national championships in any sport, ideally, but in football especially.
The national championship game is what I'd like to refer to as a sinkhole game. Like, if a sinkhole breaks out in the middle of the field and nobody can play, so everybody loses, it's great for me, right? I don't want anybody to get hurt, so it happens like pregame, maybe an hour or so before people start warming up, so like nobody gets hurt, but the game is impossible to play, right? Everybody loses. That's what it felt like for me.
The only person who I even felt remotely bad for is actual saint of a human being, Melissa Treebwasser, who comes on this podcast and chops it up with us as a friend, has done that for years. She was, you know, also chopping it up with Paul Feinbaum, teaching him the frog finger thing on the SEC network. So congrats to Melissa Treebwasser for making it, photographing and being a full capital J journalist.
The SEC network's Melissa Treebwasser.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. That Paul Feinbaum's co-host, Melissa Trieb, no, for momentary co-host. She's better than that. But, other than that, even the TCU fans I like, I'm like, you know, you deserve to have some pain after the amount of luck you've had all season. Truly probably the luckiest season of football. But that's not important. We know that Texas had an average age of around 19. TCU starters were closer to 23. It's hard to replace all that. Cinderella doesn't have a sequel, right? I've never read that story. So we'll see. We'll see if they have a bit of a come down next year. But what a ride. What a game. Man, my family in Georgia, who are diehard Bulldogs fans, have had a lot of pain themselves. Georgia used to be almost like the SEC Clemson, who just found a way to lose. And boy, have they figured out how to change that narrative.
I think the scary part is that the coach is like, what, 20 years younger than Nick Saban? So like, there's not even a retirement looming. It's just like a scandal is the only thing that's going to save college football from this buzzsaw, right? Like, I need something not heinous, right? I need something that's like acceptable college football behavior, but technically violation of the rules, right? Like something that we're all like, yeah, that absolutely happens, but not something that the NCAA will let occur.
Here it is. Kirby Smart, after years of a running tab at Chick-fil-A, goes down in the most Georgia of ways for Chick-fil-A fraud, for a $1.6 million unpaid Chick-fil-A tab that he assumed because he's the coach of the Bulldogs, he just doesn't have to pay over 12 years. That's that's my hope, the most Georgia way to take him down. And maybe, honestly.
He could go down like Harbaugh for a burger receipt. That's also a thing that's possibly happening. But it's neither here nor there. We do have to start off with a serious note. Since the last time we recorded, the Texas basketball program has parted ways with Chris Beard, fired for cause after being arrested due to a domestic violence incident at his home. The legal proceedings and how this will be adjudicated in a court of law are pretty separate from the decision that Texas made to part ways with Chris Beard, and it will potentially get ugly, even though Texas state law probably will keep it from getting too litigious. That's fine and good. But the side that we need to talk about here is, one, Texas and Chris Del Conte and all that made the hard decision, made what I think we can now say I feel like was the right decision for various reasons. But Chris Beard, no longer the coach at the University of Texas, and I think Texas is moving on.
I don't think we need to go too deep in this. I think anyone who's a Texas fan has heard about this, has thought about this, has probably had tons of conversations with their friends, family, college buddies, whatever, about this. So we don't need to beat it into the ground. I just, before we move off it, want to say there are times that things are bigger than sports, and it is good to be on the right side of history, and it's nice when looking back to be judged. Like, will Chris Beard find another landing spot down the road some point, and will we rue when he wins two national championships at some other school? Maybe. I don't know. It could be, but I really don't care. I'm glad. I mean, the pride in winning traditions, right, of the University of Texas, we take that stuff seriously. I think, you know, Chris Del Conte put out in his kind of athletic director blast this week, without really directly, you know, going into it, but kind of just saying that he meets monthly with all the coaches on campus. And they talked this month about what it means to be a leader and what that role means, and you know, what they're developing these kids both on and off the field, court, whatever, for life, and you know, how the eyes of Texas are always upon you. And a lot of that sounds a bit cliched, but I think it's important, right? I'll just leave it there, right? There was a point, I think, when this all happened, Texas was number two with a real shot to be number one in the country. That's a tough decision to make, right? Baylor football has never been number one or number two, and they protected a culture of the opposite, right? Like, that's why that's why they feel reprehensible to a lot of people, was the actions made in the wake, right? Texas, have they been perfect in everything? No, but I think, you know, ultimately they erred on the side of being on the right side of history. And so I'll just leave it at that. Domestic abuse is never okay. Believe women, all that, it all applies. And we'll just move on and leave it at that. And it's going to be an interesting, wild couple months, I'm sure, as we figure out what's next.
It's going to be interesting. I think Rodney Terry has a shot to solidify himself in this role. I think the legal side of things aside, right? Sending Chris Beard into somebody's living room to try to recruit is a situation that just could not happen moving forward. Going to talk to somebody's mother or grandmother or sister in an in-home recruiting visit would likely be a tough proposition for him. Now, it could have repercussions for Texas on the recruiting trail. You know, Ron Holland and his mom were pretty active on the Twitter sphere the day that it happened. So we'll obviously monitor that. He signed a letter of intent, so the school would have to release him from that. But I imagine Texas would if he decided that he wanted to go elsewhere. We'll keep obviously monitoring it. Like I said, Rodney Terry has an opportunity to get himself into this role. I think it's going to take a significant tournament run, unlike Texas has seen in a while, for that to happen. But we'll keep monitoring that, obviously. But Texas, in the game immediately following that, after a weird, we'll just call it the high-scoring, high-flying 116-103 loss to Kansas State, Texas got back on in the win column, 56-46, played some defense. People were critical of Rodney Terry's ability to coach defense after that Kansas State game, and Texas went out and did it. Now, they also played really terrible offense, and the officiating was a part of that. I think when you watch this game, they let them play pretty rough and pretty tough on both ends of the floor, which I'm fine with. They called it even, which felt okay to me.
Yep.
If you're gonna let them play tough, call it even, and they did, and Texas came out by 10.
Yeah, I never really care, again, as long as it's equal and you're either calling everything or calling nothing. I kind of prefer somewhere in the middle to calling nothing, right, versus making it a free throw fest. Texas hit more of their free throws, so I guess that is a good thing. Another area Oklahoma State didn't thrive in. Yeah, I mean, if you compared that Kansas State game to, like, the defensive level of an NBA All-Star game, this defensive level was, you know, I don't know, like a I don't know. I imagine a second division Greek basketball. Everyone's just bodying up and hacking and slashing and pushing and blocking shots. I mean, it was rugged. I'll put it that way. OSU had 12 blocks, and it felt like they had 10 of them in the first half. I mean, they were just blocking everything that Texas put up. A little bit of adjustment there in Texas. It wasn't as though they played well, but they did kind of get hot. The 12-1 run over the final 6 minutes, basically, to see this one out. So they figured something out towards the end there offensively. But you know, it wasn't just OSU playing good defense, forcing Texas to shoot 31%. Texas played pretty incredible defense themselves. They had 18 turnovers to 8 assists, right? A 8-18 ratio is the exact opposite of what you want if you're Oklahoma State. But they held them to 30% shooting, including 28.6% from deep. Just good defense there. And I thought, you know, it was interesting when Terry was in his press availability this week, was asked about Beard, and he talked about it, but said that he had been offered something of a co-head coach position to focus on the defense. And so it'd been interesting to see Texas score more, but struggle a little bit more on the defensive side in previous games, which kind of led to that tipping point. So I don't know if that was a reawakening in philosophy or what, but this felt like, you know, what we saw last year from that Texas team. It's going to be low scoring on both sides, but they're going to really hold, you know, another team to under 50, and they're going to win a lot of those games. So, all in all, I'd say, again, a good win, two Jekyll and Hyde performances, but if they find the medium and can hit the shots, but the Knights, they don't hit them. If they can play that, turn that level of defense on, it's great. Surprise, surprise, Marcus Carr led the team in this one with 12 points. Really, truly looking like our best player all year, which has been great to see. And I think, as you talked about, Gerald, that potential tournament run, though there's a lot of good players on this team and a lot of players who contribute, I think, you know, right now, this is Marcus Carr's team, and he was celebrated as such as one of the midseason Wooden Award 25 semifinalists. So, I mean, he's being recognized as one of the best players in college basketball, and he's playing like it right now.
Yeah, and we talked about it preseason, getting him into a two-guard spot, getting him out of that facilitator role, getting him out of having to be the trigger man and just letting him play ball and letting him play offense is paying dividends for Texas, right? So the opportunity for him to close this chapter of his basketball career on a high note is he's capitalizing on it with his performance thus far. I mean, even in the losses, he has been good, right? So for Texas, the Big 12 is just going to be a meat grinder this year for everybody, not just Texas, right? This is one of those years where the Big 12 is just going to be absolutely stinking brutal, and it's a legitimate possibility that like 9 of the 10 teams would make the tournament, if not all of the basketball playing teams of the conference, right? At this point, if the season ended today, probably most of the Big 12 makes the NCAA tournament.
Gerald, I'll take you one further. If the season ended today, and Ken Pom's rankings are not always perfect, but they're pretty closely mirrored how the selection committee with what formulas they use. If we're going to use Ken Pom's, because those are visible rankings, Gerald, how many of the teams would be at least not even in the tournament, but a number 8 seed or better out of the Big 12?
Let's go with 8 for symmetry.
It is 9. It is 9 teams, and Texas Tech is just, they're the worst. They're 0-3 in conference. Hate to see it. They are the lowest ranked Ken Pom team, and they're 41. They're just outside the top 40. So I think, you know, 41 will still get you, I'm not a math major or anything, but a right around a 10-11 seed. So that's all 10 teams, not only in the tournament, but in your top 10 seeds. Now, of course, seeding gets a little funky, and it doesn't mean that's guaranteed, but that's a really good conference, and you know it's going to be a freaking slog. It's going to be a grind. It makes you feel a little bit better about that Kansas State team because they've played well, not just against Texas. They have a transfer who's come in and really looks like the real deal for them, who can just put the ball in the basket. But, you know, Coach Tang, right now Kansas State looks better than Baylor, which is crazy to say, so maybe he was the secret to Scott Drew's success all along. I would prefer that than Scott Drew secretly being good at something. But, yeah, it's any given night in the Big 12, home, away, it doesn't matter. It's a fight. And so Texas will have to play a couple of these different types of games to win a different, you know, game every week, right? They're going to have to be multiples of teams and multiple personalities and just do enough to win, right? I'll take 1-point victories, 3-point victories all the time. They don't have to blow anyone out. Just find ways to win and get to the tournament through and stay healthy through this meat grinder. But a good thing that I like to see in this one was Dylan Mitchell tied his career high with 12 rebounds, 3 steals. Just he's active. And I think as the season goes on, he's going to be a really interesting player for us. Brock Cunningham only played 14 minutes, but in the final 10 minutes he played, he got 8 points, 2 3-pointers, a couple of rebounds. He's just he's clutch. He gives teams a different look. Texas has a lot of weapons.
Next up for Texas, 2 home games back-to-back Wednesday against TCU, the day you're listening to this, and then Texas Tech, who is absolutely trash can water thus far during conference play on Saturday. Switching to the ladies. The ladies have had, they're just dipping their toe in the rankings, right? They'll win several games in a row and then have a weird one. So the ladies split last week, topping TCU 81-69, and then going to Stillwater, coming away with an 86-82 loss, but opened the week this week with a big win over ranked Kansas, number 23 Kansas. Absolutely, like, ran them off the court, 72-59. Hopefully Texas will no longer be receiving votes and hopefully jump into the top 25 with that big win at the Mood.
Yeah, I don't fully get this team, right? It's hard to say. Deonna Gaston looks like, you know, the real deal. She had 20-6 against TCU, and I think she had 22 against Oklahoma State in the loss, only 6 points in the win. Like, it's hard to say that she's stepping in the Aaliyah Moore role on the offensive side, but she is on, you know, 3 out of every 4 nights. What we do know is Rory Harmon continues to be a double-double machine, 8-11 tonight when we're recording this. That game just ended against Kansas, but she also became the 4th player in program history against TCU last week to post a triple-double, 17 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds, just, you know, all over the place. A player who's coming on and will be really interesting to see if she can be consistently a threat is Shaylee Gonzalez, right? She had 13 in that TCU game, 26 tonight against KU. So Sonya Morris, kind of early on in the year, was our big scoring guard, and Shaylee Gonzalez faded back a little bit. Rory's come in, and now it feels like they have a 3-guard rotation like we truly thought, and it can be either of those whoever the hot hand next to Rory, and then you know, someone inside. So I think they have the pieces. It's just a matter of finding that consistency, and maybe Vic's trying some things. We'll see what it looks like as they go through a tough conference, but one that they were expected to be right at the top of.
Again, the Big 12 on the women's side is another meat grinder, right? Like, Oklahoma State's a good squad. They've got Iowa State on Sunday, who's a top 15 team, right? Like, this is going to be a meat grinder year for the ladies as well. But I think, when you get 26 from Shea Gonzalez in a win, like, that is a good night for you, right? I think she hit like 4 from 3-point range, right? Like there's a formula for them. But I don't know if anybody knows it, right? Like, there's something there. A lot of it's getting big points in the paint. I think when you look at, like, the TCU win, they got, like, 34 in the paint. It's like, that's a big deal. It's like being dominant down low, being able to get and attack the basket has been a recipe for success for them. And I think that's something to just keep track of moving forward.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
You knew we'd have to find a way to get football into this somehow. And so with the football season officially closed after TCU got their brains kicked in by Georgia, we got the final coaches poll of the year, meaning we could have friend of the show, Director's Cup Date himself, Brett Wilkinson, on to help us break down and look at the Director's Cup standings for the 2022-2023 season and see where the two-time defending champion Longhorns stack up with the rest of them. And Brett, how are you doing today?
I am good. It is Mardi Gras season here in New Orleans, so we're gearing up for that. And it's a fun time.
I will be tasting your wares of crawfish in about a month. I'll be up there, so we'll have to link up. I think I'm having a boil at our Airbnb, so you have to drop by, yeah, for sure. But the crawfish, soon to be spicy. Brett, I'm wondering, what you call transition in the business. I'm wondering if the fall closing cup dates will be spicy as well. What are you seeing as we look at fall, and maybe we can look ahead to spring once we get done, but as we wrap this up, how's it look for the Horns and the general landscape?
There's definitely some spiciness going on. Y'all mentioned the coaches poll today. I don't know that Longhorn Nation knew how big of a deal this update would be with the coaches poll, but there were a lot of points on the line. I pointed out on my Twitter earlier, had Texas been number 26, you know, in the other receiving votes category, football team would have scored 25 points. But hanging on by the thinnest of margins at number 25, that was a difference of 24 points. So the football team scored 49 Director's Cup points, up from zero. That's an infinite multiplier right there from last year.
That for our fans who are also not math majors, infinite multipliers are good. Those are good things.
That's a good thing. Absolutely. And it really just wrapped up a fall for Texas. I know you've discussed all the finishes, but really it was a fall that saw every team improve except for men's cross country. And it's really not that they did bad. I think they dropped from 13th last year to 18th this year. But across the board, soccer, women's cross country, volleyball, and football all improved their scores from last year.
And I think that's one of the big things we want to talk about, because the last two Director's Cup wins for Texas really were come from behind doesn't seem like the right verbiage, but Texas really won it based on really strong winter and spring semesters. So Texas, improving significantly. It seems like it was like a triple digit improvement from year to year. Is that accurate to say?
That's right. That's right. So Texas is outpacing themselves from last year by about 111 points. So yeah, that's triple digits there. You've got some math skills there as well. So yeah, they're in a great place. Texas is never going to win. I mean, nobody's really going to win this in the fall, even as hot as North Carolina's been. They certainly don't have it, in the bag. But Texas could lose the Director's Cup in the fall. They put up a few goose eggs. They have some bad showings. There's just not enough sports left for Texas to make it up. So they really do need to start strong on a yearly basis to have a chance.
And just a quick little recap, I think that's the perfect place to put it. For our listeners who maybe are new or missed your previous episodes or have forgotten, tell the kind of basic overlay of the algorithm again, how many items go into it and what Texas, has to offer.
Yeah, so the Director's Cup calculation, it's your top 19 scoring sports. Doesn't matter if it's men's or women's sports, it's all together. And you have to count volleyball, both basketball teams, and baseball. Pretty simple formula, really.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like four national championships right there for Texas. But Texas has 20, sports, I think, as of now. We'll talk a moment about the future. But, what they have, a lot of those just by default, we don't have some of the ice sports and things that happen in the first semester. So a lot of Texas stuff does come, and I think it's a good point. They can't win it in the fall, but they can lose it. So looking ahead then to the spring, which will be the bread and butter, we know that a lot of sports are kicking off, this week or in the next couple weeks, right? I think men's tennis is back now, women's tennis and indoor track, as well as swimming and diving all this Friday, right after you're listening to this. So we have a lot of sports coming up. What are you kind of projecting Texas where they need to be overall? You don't have to give us each prediction of each, specific sport. That'd be pretty brutal. But where do you kind of feel they need to be?
Well, I think the major thing right now is to watch the basketball teams. I think both of those teams could go and who knows what kind of trajectory. So we want good finishes there. Those scores have to be counted. So we need good finishes. Other than that, if you're looking on average, if Texas is finishing around top 10 on average across the board, that's going to be competitive. Last year, they averaged fifth or sixth place across all sports, which is insane.
Yeah.
They don't have to be that fantastic. But if they're scoring a lot of top 10, top 8 finishes, they're going to be in a good place.
I mean, the rowing team, we can pencil that one in for 100 points, right? Like that one feels like
down.
Just we can do it in like a heavy pencil, a dark pencil, but Yeah, like we've said, generally it's the winter and spring that wins this for Texas, and you know we saw multiple national championships last year. So Texas being, because they weren't in the top 10 in the Director's Cup standings coming out of the fall last year, so they're in a solid position to make another late surge. The track team, the women's basketball team, potentially the men's basketball team, though that's kind of iffy as it stands right now. Rowing still on the board, right? Softball, baseball, like the big hitters. Track and field, big hitters. Swimming and diving, big hitters still on the board for Texas.
Yeah, lots of good results coming. I know the social media accounts post, top 25 Texas. Follow that. I know y'all talk about top 10 Texas all the time. That's going to be the reality, I think, this winter and spring as well. And it's all those top 10 finishes going along with a few national championships sprinkled in that really lets Texas compete in the Director's Cup.
Well, you're a good friend of ours, but we're not going to let you off easy. I mean, I know there's a lot to be had, but are you going to come out and be the first to predict it that Texas is going to three-peat? Are you willing to say that on this very podcast? Too early to tell, or are you predicting?
I try to be quite objective, so we're not quite there with the spreadsheet.
You're a good steward.
Well, I'm going to start plugging in numbers. Once we get outdoor track and field rankings, that's when we can really start projecting what the finish will look like. But I think Texas is in a great spot. Once again, North Carolina is looking great this fall. I think they're gonna falter a little bit in the winter, spring. They just don't have those type of sports. Stanford's in a good place, and you can't count Stanford out when it comes to the Director's Cup. So they still have like 20 sports left. If they get some top finishes, they're gonna be up there.
So let's close on this note, and I put it in the notes just to make Gerald furious. I'm calling this section the 21 Can You Do Something For Me? That is a quoting Drake lyric, of course. Texas goes from 20 sports to 21. Can you tell us a little bit about this? I think right when you were on the last time, you may have spoke this into existence.
He predicted, we recorded it, and then they announced it like the next day.
Yeah. We put it on tape, but we didn't get it published before Chris Del Conte
got we were coming.
Press release out there.
What a bummer.
So yeah, you're talking about beach volleyball being added to the mix. They're not competing at the NCAA level this spring, but I think that was one of the sports that I said Texas should consider adding. Chris, if you're listening, bowling and rifle were the other two. Go ahead and get that in the works. But yeah, I think that if Texas expands with some more quality teams, it just gives you that much more wiggle room to have a few sports that might falter here and there. Or we could just do what Texas has been doing and be fantastic across the board.
How about both, right? Just add a bunch of sports and be elite, right? There's no reason that you can't do both.
Yeah, that's pretty much what Stanford did for their 25-year reign of terror on the Director's Cup. And I think some things have changed with their athletic department, but that's the key to success, honestly.
Volume shooters. Well, Brett, thank you so much for joining us, man. If folks want more of what you've got to offer to keep up with the Director's Cup updates, man, where can they find you on the internet?
Yep, I'm on Twitter. I'm at @Direct_CupDates. So find me there, follow me. That's where I post all my updates. Every national championship, I'm updating the scores with a little extra sprinkled in here and there when I can put something out.
I love it. If you're not following him on Twitter, I don't know that you're doing Twitter correctly. So make sure you give him a follow and check out the cool stuff. Thanks, Brett, always coming on. It always you're the right type of nerd. You're different than Gerald and I, but it certainly works for my brain. I love it when you break it down for us.
Absolutely. Well, y'all have a good one. Thanks for having me.
You as well, brother. Thank you. So that's a part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. A lot of movement for the football team this week. Big report, one of the biggest news, is reports that UNLV is set to hire Brendan Marion as their offensive coordinator to replace the outbound Bobby Petrino. But a lot of people say that this move doesn't really make sense for Brendan Marion, but like UNLV, the offensive coordinator role is kind of a kingmaker, right? Like the last guy was only there a month and he got an SEC job. So like it seems to be that like this is the place to be if you want to get a big time gig in a quick turnaround.
Yeah, we know that, Jimbo's been playing possum. Jimbo's been playing chess while the rest of us were playing checkers. He obviously tanked so that he could justify hiring a big-time offensive coordinator. What most, for whatever reason, football minds of large sites have been saying, Bobby Petrino, one of the best offensive minds in college football in 2023, they're saying that, not 2015. He's certainly a well-known hire, and it left a vacancy. And Barry Odom, you know, is a well-known coach and especially coordinator, and it's going to be a team that people are watching. He's a defensive guy. He's hiring an offensive coordinator, and you see it with the Petrino hire that says, "I'm turning over the reins to let you just control the offense, and I'm going to keep an eye on the defense." So it's, you know, it's going to be an offensive coordinator with a lot of autonomy. They're really going to probably let him go full go-go, which is his kind of offensive philosophy that he's invented. We didn't see a ton of go-go concepts in Texas in the time he was at Texas, but you know, it'll be curious if he takes some things from Sark from the last time we saw him. As an offensive coordinator, it's been a few years. He probably should have gotten that role at Pitt, but Narduzzi let him go to come to Texas. When he hired, if you go back and listen to this podcast, Gerald and I both broke it down and said he's one of the hottest names and fastest risers in college football. If we get 2 years out of him, we'll be grateful. I think we all knew this would be done because Sark's going to call the plays, and he's a guy who wants to be calling plays. And so it makes sense. It's a good move for Marion. I think it is. I think he did a good job here stocking the cabinet. He's obviously a great recruiter. I'm going to be very curious to see who Texas brings into that role. Hopefully someone who's a really strong recruiter, but also a great developer of talent. But I think we're just in a much better position in that room, especially with Nayer coming back healthy, with some other players, you know, coming back, as far as we know, everyone back. So I think he left it in a better place than he found it. You can say that for sure. So after a couple years of struggling to recruit at that position, a key, maybe your most vital recruiter position, it's going to be a very key hire for Sark for whoever replaces Coach Marion.
Yeah, I think that's like the conversation that you have around Brendan Marion is like there are guys who are developers and there are guys who are recruiters generally when it comes to like that wide receiver role. There are some, like you look at like Brian Hartline in Columbus, who there's a reason why he is who he is, that like can do both, but there's not a ton of those guys out there. And so like, you know, Andre Coleman was definitely a developer over a recruiter, and we spent years complaining about him and the guy before him struggling to recruit that wide receiver position. So Brendan Marion comes in and flips the room in 2 years, like, or I guess a year, really a year and a half. So the ability for whoever comes in next to have a stock cupboard, they don't necessarily have to be the best recruiter in the world. They've got to land a couple of kids. There are already names that are flying around, and, you know, people are asking for Rashad Samples. I don't have sources. I don't have names. So we'll see how that turns out. But for Texas, again, we knew that this was going to be a short stay for Brendan Marion. And so him going to the next OC role that he's looking for, upward mobility is the name of the game for him. And we hope to see him have success out in Vegas. A big pickup for Texas to basically all but close out the 2023 class. There's maybe one-ish guy out there for them in 2023, but four-star athlete Jelani McDonald committed to Texas at the Army All-American game. Thanked all of the pretty ladies out there as part of his commitment. So just, again, and already a legend in his own mind, which I appreciate. He was like all over the field for Waco Conley. He's like he's a three-star or a three-sport kid. He played wide receiver, quarterback, and defensive back for Waco Conley, played defensive back in the All-American game, but also as a state champion, like triple jumper. He jumped a 48.2 as a junior, so like an explosive athlete there. An average 20 and a half points in the 4A basketball playoffs. Like, he's just an athlete, and I like having those kind of guys in the defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it may be because, you know, in today's day and age, because he is such an athlete who played a lot of sports and a lot of different positions and wasn't so hyper focused, that it may take his development curve just a little bit longer. I think he probably projects as a defensive back for Texas. You know, but even that is not always told, right? We know Deshaun Jameson had a long career defensive back, started off as a wide receiver. You see guys, you know, obviously Roshon Johnson made the switch, but you see guys make the switch relatively frequently, right? The guys who can play multiple positions, and most of these guys do play, you know, a couple positions in high school. Some, like your Jordan Whittington's, play all the positions, right? And I think we're in a situation like that. It sometimes will, you know, you can tell the guy who played receiver in high school, you know, and got 100 catches, 150 catches and ran 300 routes, you know, he has a little more precision than the guy who is just the best athlete. So sometimes he ran the ball, sometimes he threw the ball, sometimes he caught the ball. I think Jelani McDonald is certainly in that athlete category, and that's not a bad thing. I just, you know, it may be 2 years before we really see him on the field, unless he just comes in and is just a monster, because the defensive back room won't tip our hand, but it did get a little bit better this week as well.
Yeah, and he's a guy who, again, he played, he almost compares favorably to like DeMarvian Overshown at that
Overshown
time, coming in as a five-star safety. Like, he's shorter than Overshown, but he's already at like 6'2", 200. Jeff Choate was his primary recruiter, so I think that gives you a little bit of insight into where Texas sees his like long-term future, and honestly, potentially his NFL future, right? Like, DeMarvian Overshown came in as a tweener defensive back, just like him, and ended up not seeing the field until he made the switch and ate his way down to linebacker. So I think for a guy like McDonald, seeing DeMarvian Overshown playing that role and being, you know, a little bit of an edge rusher, a little bit of a linebacker, a little bit of a cover linebacker, like, that's, the NFL is moving towards hybrid linebacker kind of types. And so seeing what Jeff Choate and the Texas defense did with him, probably not a bad thing.
If he's truly going to play linebacker, I think it's funny that Texas seems to do in the short Sark tenure a thing where they say, oh, we don't have any of that. Well, we'll, by God, overcorrect the heck out of that. We don't have any offensive linemen. Give me 50 of them. You know, we don't have any linebackers. Take 12 of them. Like, they just, you know, I kind of like it. They're like, oh, we're a weakness. Well, it's now a strength. We got 10 guys in this class, and you better believe at least four of them pan out, right? So that's a strategy, and I like it. We're worried about linebacker a lot heading into the year, and we got a whole bunch of those kids if he does truly play at linebacker there with a couple of the other ace recruits, including, of course, number one linebacker in the nation, Ant Hill, and two other absolute monsters. So just all in all, I think whatever position he plays on the defensive back, linebacker, both, I think it's great that we're getting big recruits on the defensive side of the ball as well. I think that's, you know, we're going to win games, do it in the trenches, do it with good defense. We'll figure out a way to get the offense. We have enough studs there. It's going to come for us in the coming years. We're going to be a Sark offense. I just know it.
Yeah. Again, I think this linebacker class absolutely flipped it. And speaking of the linebackers and Anthony Hill, 16 of the 26 members of the class of 2023 are officially enrolled. I think the last day to enroll is Thursday, as you're listening to this, tomorrow. So Arch Manning, Cedric Bastard, Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore all moved in on the offensive line. Jaden Chapman, Andre Kojo, Peyton Kirtland, and Connor Stroh. Colton Vasek, Big Sadir Mitchell, Anthony Hill, Leona Lefau, Darian Gallette, who's rehabbing an ACL, Manny Muhammad, and then two transfers are also on campus. Holmes from Wake Forest, and then
Daryl, who's the second one? Is there a second?
A guy who you and I lamented while we were doing this podcast in 2019, who Texas was unable to close with him, Jalen Catalon, who ended up and was very mean to Texas a couple of years ago, decided to come to Austin and hopefully right some wrongs, but announced after a day and a half visit, had dinner with Sark, announced that he was going to come to Austin to play out his final year of eligibility. So big pickups for Texas there and getting started with winter conditioning.
Yeah, it's interesting. You get those recruits who kind of just get stuck in your craw when they don't come to Texas, and you just always think what could have been. I mean, we talk about a certain TCO receiver who's likely to be the number one receiver in the draft. We've talked about him for 3+ years on this podcast about how much it sucks that we missed on him. And there's just a couple of those guys. And Jalen Catalon was one of those guys for me. I've watched his career because it was a position that I would have liked to have him in at. There's a couple different times that I've thought, ooh, it'd be nice to have him in our defensive backfield. He's had a tough couple years with some injuries, right? The last year that he was truly 100% fully healthy was his freshman year when he was a freshman All-American and All-SEC player. He's been very good when healthy, again, just the past, especially last season, ended early with a shoulder injury. So if he can get back to full health, I mean, again, if he didn't have those injury things, they're talking Jalen Catalon, preseason All-American. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. That's the type of talent that he has, and it is a position of need for us for sure, especially replacing Anthony Cook with a lot of seniority. I think it's a great move. But again, his upside is first, probably second round NFL draft pick talent, without a doubt. So it's a huge get for us, and a player I'm just finally happy to see don the burnt orange.
Feels good to have him there. And again, Texas, the Texas defense could be pretty salty next year in spite of what they're losing. they could be all right. So some miscellaneous football stuff. Jonathan Brooks underwent surgery for a hernia following the season, so he should be healthy for spring camp, but never good to see that. Jordan Whittington and Christian Jones both announced that they will be returning for another year. Troy O'Meary found his new home at Arizona State following Rashad Samples out there to the desert. Ovio Gufo decided that he was going to move on, is in the transfer portal. And then we officially got word that Keandre Coburn and Mora Ojomo are both going to be declaring for the NFL draft. A lot of movement on the 40 acres on the news side of things.
Yeah, and I'm excited both about Whittington and Christian Jones. Like you said, we're losing some leaders, some vocal leaders on this team. They're both on the offensive side of the ball where you have to replace Bijan and certainly the outspoken leader of the team in Roshan Johnson. So I hope Whittington can step up and be a vocal leader. I hope Christian Jones, with the step up he had from his first year kind of starting to his second year and last year, if he can, you know, maintain or even step up from that and you know, just bring that senior leadership to a room that will be older next year, but still, you know, still filled with some young pups. I think it'll be a great addition to have both of them back. But again, the offensive line more than any position. Again, look at TCU, right? Just look at every team. Look at Georgia with Stetson Bennett never breaking a sweat in the pocket. Offensive lines protecting your quarterbacks. I think Quinn Ewers, with time, we can see a whole different offense if we don't have to, you know, put six linemen out on pass blocking downs because we take some steps forward. And that comes with experience, that comes with seniority, that comes with continuity.
So hopefully Texas will see what this looks like moving into spring practice here in just a couple of months. But they'll work out for the offseason. Hopefully Texas finds some of those leaders and leadership that they're losing. Number 8 men's tennis kicked off the spring season in Coral Gables. Not a bad place to be in January at the Miami Invitational, featuring the aforementioned Miami Hurricanes. Number 7 Georgia and number 10 South Carolina. Texas recorded 7 wins, including 3 over top 25 ranked opponents. Pierre-Yves Bailly got over on the number 1 player in the country, Ethan Quinn, 6-3, 6-4. Elliot Spizieri went undefeated in the weekend. The Longhorns will head back to the Sunshine State next week to face number 13 Florida in Gainesville in their first duel of the year.
Yeah, PYB, pretty young thing. Pierre-Yves Bailly, you got to have a little accentation on your pronunciation there, Gerald. Would have been ranked, didn't play in the fall, but himself would have been ranked. But I like that Spizieri went undefeated and the number one guy went down. So there's a chance Elliot Spizieri jumps up to that number one spot, at least number two. So it's good. Longhorns up in Longhorns. It's a good start to the season.
Quick hit on some baseball recruiting. Texas got not one, but 2 commitments in the last week. Starting with 2024 Harvard Westlake, California, shortstop Bryce Rainier. Rainier, we'll go with that, committed to Texas. He is potentially a guy who Texas will lose to the MLB draft. He has got first round upside, according to many. He's like a top 10 high school player. So I don't expect him to make it to campus, but it's good to get him committed because some guys get wild hairs and decide they want to play in college for a little bit and have that experience. And I'm not mad about it. So get him committed and then see what shakes out. 2026 is a long way away, though, but Texas picked up a commitment for that class as well. Lake Travis catcher Wyatt Gatlin pulled the trigger. He's a guy who likes to hit dingers.
Yeah, also just a fantastic, like, have you heard a more Texas baseball name than a guy named Wyatt Gatlin who plays catcher? I mean, that just feels like a character from a Wild West novel. I'm ready for him to come on the 40 acres. It's, you know, I love catchers, so I'm always deep in recruiting, but especially the backstops.
And finally, the track team, not quite on the track yet, still a little cold for that, but Julian Alfred getting some pub already, named to the Bowerman preseason watch list.
Yeah, track season indoor will pick back up this week, Gerald, on the 13th. Bowerman is the outstanding male and female NCAA track athlete. Obviously, Julian's for the female NCAA track and field athlete. She was the 2022 NCAA 100 meter and 4x1 outdoor champion. She was undefeated in the outdoor season in the 100. So you can say without a doubt, usually the person who runs the 100 the fastest is the fastest person in the country. So that's her, Julian Alfred, fastest woman in the country, at least at the collegiate level. And she, as we talked about, has posted some national and international eyebrow raising times. So a speed demon will be a fun season. Hopefully Texas can bring home more hardware, indoor and outdoor track.
Second Michael Jackson reference of the podcast.
All right, now it's time to take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. Let's start with tennis. Gerald, the men's tennis team added Sudanwa Sitaram, a former Texas team captain, all Big 12 honoree, two-time Arthur Ashe Award recipient, well-regarded developmental coach in Austin, joined the team as a volunteer assistant for Bruce Burke. We've seen this with the baseball team. With Troy Tulowitzki previously, sometimes your volunteer assistant can be turned into a full-time coach. Sometimes it can just be an extra set of hands, but a really important addition, I think, for a tennis team on the men's side that tries to keep up now with the women's side that's winning national championships. And speaking of the women's team, they were ranked number one in the initial ITA Division I preseason poll. They'll be kicking off their season as the men did in Miami on Friday. Gerald, something that I think you will be uniquely attuned to. Derek Johnson, one of your all-time favorites, you've said on this very podcast many a time, selected for induction into the College Football Hall of Fame. He'll be, I believe, next year in December. It's announced now, but it will be next December. He will be officially inducted, and at that time will become the 25th Longhorn to do so. Gerald, thoughts?
I've told this story on the podcast multiple times. Like, Derek Johnson being at the University of Texas is the reason why I ended up at the University of Texas. Like, the 2003 Red River game where he, like, the strip sack of, I think it was Jason White, where the ball, he, like, just flew down the field and another Texas player recovered it. Like, I'd never seen somebody play football like that. And, you know, I'd been playing football for, you know, watching football for my entire life. And so, I much deserved, well deserved. There has to be a situation to get that man's name in the rafters at DKR. Like, there just has to be, right? Like, there's got to be something.
Two-time, I think he's a one of only like four, five something Longhorns who are multiple-time consensus All-Americans, not just multiple-time All-American, but consensus All-Americans. You know, won every award that was available to him. I don't know. I mean, we need to lobby Del Conte hard between now and his induction in December. Get DJ's number up there. The guy deserves it. Also, a legendary Chief. I have a buddy who's a Chiefs fan who moved to Austin, not as a UT fan, and all that he knew about Austin was Derek Johnson and Jamal Charles and Priest Holmes. But, you know, pretty good trio there. Speaking of NFL Longhorns, Gerald, there's a lot to break down as the season officially comes to an end. And there's we did our kind of Longhorn of the Week throughout the season, but we missed some guys in there. So I wanted to just go through and touch on a couple guys at the end of the season who maybe didn't get their stats called out, but who played, you know, in the NFL. Longhorns in the NFL is a big deal. We'll obviously give a couple updates of some players who are still playing, but just wanted to call a couple of them out who we don't call out every week. Calvin Anderson, offensive tackle for the Denver Broncos, played in 14 games this season, started 7. Caden Stearns, a guy we loved, obviously went in the IR on that same team with a hip injury, but just wanted to give some shouts to the big fellows. We obviously also had for your Miami Dolphins, right? We had Connor Williams, who started all 17 games under center. Also, his teammate Brandon Jones went out in October with a torn ACL. Only started all 7 games and got 50 tackles, 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble, 3 pass deflections. Had a really good season going when he went out. So, you know, both of those defensive backs playing with linemen didn't have the seasons they wanted with them cut early, but played really well. So hopeful for the young guys to come back even stronger. Another lineman who played a lot this season, Sam Cosmi for the Commanders. Haven't got to call his name. Jeff Swaim, guy who started 13 games, played 17. Tight end, almost a lineman, just did a lot of the grunt work blocking, but did get 12 catches for a touchdown and 58 yards in there. Colin Johnson missed this whole year with a torn Achilles. Sad for him on the Giants, but he got Marcus Johnson a chance to play a little bit with those same Giants. Adrian Phillips' name was called out a little bit less this year as he didn't have quite the stats, but he still played in 17 games and started 8, had 66 tackles on the year, but a Patriot we called out a lot this year, only played special teams, still had 14 tackles and 2 fumble recoveries. Those are almost like Pro Bowl special teams numbers for Brendan Schooler. Was a great player, found a niche there. Did want to call out, you know, just a couple of the other big bodies. We talked about Chuck Amenahu kind of all year. He didn't start a ton, but got 4.5 sacks and a forced fumble and some, you know, good tackles this season. Hassan Ridgeway was on his way to a good year. You know, started 7 games before he went out with a chest injury. So, you know, some unfortunate injury all across there. Had a couple quarterbacks this year, which I like to see in the beginning and the end of their careers. Colt McCoy played in 4 games with 3 starts, completed 90 passes for 780 yards, had a touchdown. You know, probably not the most vintage Colt year, but man's cashing checks and a reliable backup and brain on your team there. And then Sam Ehlinger starting his career, started last week at quarterback, completed 23 of 35 for 209, 2 touchdowns. He did have 2 picks and a fumble, but that's okay. He played in 4 games with 3 starts this year. Bright future for him. We didn't expect him to come in day one, but a lot to go there as well. Chris Boyd, not a guy we got to talk about a ton, but he started, you know, he played in all 17 games. This week, he had his best game of the season, 5 tackles, 4 of them solo. It was 5 of his 13 on the season. Jordan Hicks had another monster year. He played all year, 17 starts, 129 tackles, 10 pass breakups, interception, forced fumble, just consistent, you know, consistently great as we know it. Anyone else we didn't talk about all year who you think I need to throw some shine on? I think TQ Graham got talked about a lot. He's been out since November with a knee injury. I think we hit most of them, if not this episode, then in previous episodes. There's a lot of Longhorns in the NFL, and that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think not a guy that we haven't talked about. We've talked about him some, but we do have to mention Quandre Diggs for Seattle, picking off Baker Mayfield for a win on Saturday, Sunday. Picking him off, getting him into the playoffs, come to find out. Yep. So, like, Quandre the Giant making plays, keeping his old team out of the playoffs, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty beautiful. He kept the Lions. Another guy who helped keep the Lions out of the playoffs was Baker Mayfield, who threw that interception. He kept 3 teams out of the playoffs. He played for the Rams, Lions, and Panthers, who all missed the playoffs. But Quandre was great, man. 71 tackles, 4 interceptions, 1 forced fumble, 7 PBUs. A man who's getting up there in years but still knows how to make a play. Again, an overtime interception that leads to the game-winning drive that sends you to the playoffs. Pretty good. He did kind of point at his former teammate, and I wonder if there was something in there a little bit. But, you know, Quandre's going to Quandre. He ain't going to take nothing from nobody, and I love that about him. And that's why he is, this week, our Longhorn of the Week.
Much deserved, Quandre the Giant. We love you.
All right, Gerald, let's move on from there. We could spend a long time talking about each of those guys, but let's wrap it up. The big bit of Godzilla-tron. What have you been watching? What are you planning to watch? What do you got going on your giant screen?
Not a ton this last week. Watched some college football. I don't know if you knew that was going on. The one big streamer for my wife and I, we finished off Mythic Quest Season 3. Absolutely just continues to be one of the most underrated comedies on TV. Just hilarious, funny. Episode 7 of every season is like a... I don't even know how to describe it. Like a flashback episode, and it's always kind of sad and melancholy. And so this year's was just as sad and melancholy as it always is. So I really appreciate them continuing to just beat me down emotionally. But it had some beautiful moments in it. Obviously, my wife and I really enjoyed it. Hilarious, very laugh out loud, funny. There's some University of Texas like alum folks that I think work on the shows. Like, check it out.
There's also a Samuel Clemens Buffalo who works on the show. Shout outs to our boy Randall Castillo, who writes for that show. I still have not watched it, and I'm sorry, Randall. I will, I promise. I watched. Dude,
get it together.
I know. We don't watch Spurs together anymore, so I have nothing to. We used to catch up on the Spurs updates, and you don't need to do that. They're just tanking to get the number one pick. But what I did watch, Gerald, in addition to finishing out the second season of the TV show Sex Lives of College Girls, I also watched on HBO. A movie that my wife suggested, and she said she'd heard good things, and I was pretty sure I had heard the opposite of good things, but I went with it. I'll just say, after watching this blockbuster, quote unquote, I understood why they kind of had to fabricate a bit of drama with like people spitting on people and someone not having trouble with the director and almost leaving and Shia LaBeouf. Not, you know what I'm talking about, that movie. It's called Don't Worry, Darling, I believe. And it's perfectly adequate film. There's no reason to watch it if you hadn't been planning on it. If you were like, ooh, I wonder if all that drama, I meant to get back and watch. You're okay. You don't have to. You can. There's some good singular performances in it, but it's just kind of, it's microwaved, right? It's nothing in it is fresh. It's reheated and microwaved and average in a lot of ways. It feels like they, you know, use a lot of like hallucination cutaway scenes to give the depth and artistry that they thought they were going for, but it's just like a microwaved Stepford Wives. It's fine. It's don't worry about it. If you also have a spouse who'd like you to watch it, or you yourself thought you wanted to watch it, I'm not going to tell you can't, but you know, it may not be the best use of your time. Watch Mythic Quest seasons 1-3 instead.
The people involved in that movie, like, you know, like Florence Pugh, great actress, Olivia
Wilde.
She
was great. She was great.
Great creative. I am not sold on the Harry Styles as an actor thing, just not for me.
He wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't like he made the movie unwatchable. He wasn't the thing that, you know, tanked it. It just wasn't a great movie.
Well, there you go. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
In a bit of uplifting homage to our fallen TCU brethren, our buddy Parker at Stats of War on Twitter, you know, is one of the best in the game out there at college football stats, graphs, analysis, you know, things that look pretty but also tell a story. So, you know, should probably be checking out what he's putting out, but before the national championship game, when it just became Sads of War, he put out some Big 12 rushing numbers that jumped off the page to me. And what he said is you can kind of qualify a team's run game to look at how many yards after contact and how much that affected their ultimate success rate, right? And so they put all, he put all the 10 Big 12 teams with a kind of bar graph with a fully, you know, dark color that basically, if you read it this way, I'm probably butchering his view, but that's what the offensive line provided for a running back. And then the opaque portion above it, you know, is what the team ultimately achieved, right? And that's the Big 12 success rate, both before and after contact. Think of it that way. Now, if you remember back to your stats and to Gerald and I breaking it down, Texas was second in the Big 12 in rushing success rate total. Like, they were good. They're real good. Almost 50%. Texas was dead last in rushing success rate before contact. You know, if they're close to 50% total, they were under 20% or right around 20% in the before. You know, TCU, 25%. OU, 28-ish%, right? All the rest of the teams are, you know, exponents above where UT was. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, UT had, I don't want to say the worst offensive line, but the best running back, right? And we knew that in the Big 12. So I was curious how it looked in other conferences. And he put out SEC, and then he put out Big 10. And I remember there was a lot of people in the Big 10 who were clamoring for Blake Corum, and a lot of people saying that he should be he's the best back, and he should have won the Doak Walker and whatever, whatever. Blake Corum's is almost 30%. His offensive line basically accounted for. So if you look at this part, if you put those two charts next to each other, you know, Bijan is doing more before Corum even has to break a sweat, basically every carry. And I think it just, you know, I like stats. I like the graphs. I love the eye test, but it's nice when you can back it up. And I think we said that very thing on this podcast. And shouts out to Stats of War. I think he tweeted it on, and we retweeted it from our podcast as well. So you should have seen it there if you're following us, as you should be. But if not, go check it out and follow it back to Parker's thread with all the different teams. It's an interesting graph, one of many that he makes all season. So shouts to Parker. And once again, shouts to Bijan.
If you're following us and not Parker, you're doing Twitter wrong. Let's just be honest here. Follow us both. Now, so I'm banging the drum this week on narratives, right? So we've made jokes about it and all those things about TCU getting absolutely demolished in the national championship game. And as soon as that happened, I knew the internet was going to be annoying. I knew that all of the dumb takesmen, all of the two-loss Alabama fans, all of the other fans that felt like they should have been, that their team should have been in the playoff, would be coming out, doubting TCU's place among the national elites, right? And there are two things that I would like to say as we talk about the narratives around college football and around the college football playoff and who deserves to be there, right? If you think it's based on the name of the team or what Vegas would set the line at, then why do we even play the games? Michigan and TCU should have never played that game. We should have just moved Michigan along to the national championship game. But guess what? They lost, right? TCU beat them. Right, TCU beat them at their own. Actually, TCU made them play a game like they haven't played all year and beat them. Right, like TCU did what they had done to a lot of teams all year and made you get outside of your identity and then beat you. Right, and we can talk about Sonny Dykes and whether we'll be shocked in 5 years that TCU did what they did this year. That's another conversation for another day. But if you did not doubt the legitimacy of Michigan being in the college football playoff, yet you let last night Yet you let Monday's result make you doubt TCU's place. What are you doing? Like, yes, TCU got run out of the stadium. But you know what? There are exactly zero teams in the country that wouldn't have gotten their behinds whooped. It may not have looked like that. But part of that result was also the fact that Kirby Smart was a chin hair away from losing in the semifinals. And so he was able to play up. And this is what makes Kirby Smart a great coach. He's able to take one of the most talented football teams that has ever existed and convince them they're underdogs, right? So them nearly going out sad. Ohio State going out in the saddest of saddest ways, which is hilarious still, by the way. Allowed him to play up that underdog doubters card. And they came out, and whether it was Alabama, whether it was Michigan, whether it was Ohio State, I feel like anybody would have gotten taken to the woodshed in that game. And so it just happened to be a little old TCU. It just happened to be a Big 12 team. And so the big bad SEC narrative continues. If you did not doubt Michigan's place in the college football playoff, yet you let Monday's game force you or cause you to doubt TCU's place in the playoff, take a step back and re-examine the logic you're using.
That's it. TCU was really lucky. They were also quite good. Just weren't, you know, anywhere near. They didn't have the blue chip ratio that Georgia had. No one besides Alabama is anywhere close. They didn't have the, you know, 600 pounders. That's a slight exaggeration. They're probably 450. Just behemoths on both sides of the lines. Why do you think Sark and Flood and the defensive coaches are prioritizing that? We're trying to build a Georgia. Georgia tried to build an Alabama, right? There's been a standard. There's been a precedent. It's changed. It's tweaked. Sark helped change that at Alabama on what the new, you know, answer looks like. Todd Monken probably is underrated for the job he did with that Georgia offense, right? They didn't have the traditional weapons that a team that good has, but they had the best player, you know, offensive player in the country, arguably after Bijan and Brock Bowers. You notice how he did that there. And they used him in interesting ways, and he was good enough that it made Stetson Bennett look like a good quarterback. He isn't, but that's fine. They still were good. Stetson Bennett is a perfectly fine quarterback, and they have an elite defense, an elite offensive line, really good running backs, and two elite tight ends, and you know, they were just the better team by a lot, and that's okay. That doesn't mean TCU was bad. It doesn't invalidate TCU's season. TCU was lucky, but they were fun, and they got there, right? They could have lost to Texas, could have lost to West Virginia, could have lost to Baylor, but they didn't, and they got there, so they earned it. They messed around and they found out. But, you know, that's if you want to play big boy football, TCU got a chance to do it, and it's hard. So let your narratives lie. Just enjoy it. Like, that's the whole thing. Just enjoy football, man. It's a lot more fun when you do.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carby. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. For the love of God, don't try to hire John Calipari.